Accession number 17681, Reel 5.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 5.
Bergen Belsen, I was designated town major of Bergen Belsen, as were many junior officers of my sort, my rank, all over various captured towns in Germany. The country was being ruled by under military law, which is a very different thing to civil law or what came later, the control commissions law. It was a very tough time. And I look back with wonder sometimes at what we, as very young men, had to do, administering these people, suddenly having come from fighting and killing people all the way up from Normandy. So there was I, one of these people, town major of Belsen, Bergen, and I had to administer the area where there was, of course, a strict curfew from dusk to dawn. Anybody breaking that curfew was liable to be shot. Many of these Poles, displaced people, did break it, and regrettably they were shot, because we didn't know who they were, what they were doing. A lot of them were taking revenge on German farmers. One could understand it, but it still was not within the rules and the law, and we had to stop it. To our astonishment, we found ourselves protecting the Germans against the Poles, the very people we liberated, not just Poles, but Jews. A very nasty business. I took over a house in Bergen, which had been occupied by a German SS Gestapo man of the area. Needless to say, it was very comfortable. And I moved my company headquarters in there. I had a captain and three subalterns, and I moved my batman and cook and so on. I was very comfortable there. There were nice pictures and cutlery and crockery, and I remember we had a Hungarian band who were also prisoners there, and I had four excellent horses and Hungarian grooms. It was a good rest after the war. But it was still hard work looking after the big area we had. I did not realize, until I'd been there a week or two, that the lampshades in my bedroom and one or two others were in fact, in some macabre way, made from human skin, which the SS people had made, which was a pretty nasty feeling once one was told. One of the things my company also had to do was to incarcerate the commandant of Belsen, the German commandant, whose name was Joseph Kramer, and his guards, the main ones, as well as the commander, the woman commander of the women's prison, whose name was Irma Grazer. And those people were in my prison in the nearby town of Celle, which my company had to look after at one time. This entailed me inspecting them in their cells every day with the German prison man and a German interpreter and my sergeant major, a normal military inspection. Joseph Kramer was an enormous, callous, ghastly-looking fellow, 6'6", but very correct, I remember, and he always used to stand stiffly to attention when I came. Any complaints, nein, Herr Major, he used to say, Are you being looked after? Yes, they're good, Herr Major. All right. But I had the other sort of treatment when I went to the women's side and said, now, you're being looked after. I had nothing but abuse. And I said to the German interpreter, what is this woman saying? I dare not tell you, sir, he said. I said, you will tell me. Well, he then translated a series of obscene sentences from Irma Graeser and obscene demands that if I had any decency, I would allow them to have men in their cells. They were demented. I also had a feeling they were all lesbians. But it was a very nasty thing for a young man in my middle 20s to have to put up with, having to look after these sort of people who one had never, ever met in one's whole life before. They were inhuman.
But if they were demanding men, it doesn't sound as if they were lesbians.
Exactly, but they looked lesbians to me. I quite agree. I mean, I just don't know. I was only a young man. Whatever it was, they were sexually repugnant. I'd forget whether we gave them any baths, but they smelt to high heaven. And it was a thoroughly unpleasant experience for us. They were taken away shortly afterwards, tried by a military court in Lüneburg, and hanged. This was before the more major war trials at Nuremberg. This was done under our auspices in the British zone, Lüneburg area.
Were there other women guards with Irma Graeser?
Oh, 20 or 30. Yes.
And male guards with Kramer?
Oh, yes. Plenty. They were the people who ran the thing. And to support them and do the heavy work, they had perhaps a battalion of, or a regiment of Hungarian troops and a regiment of German troops. It was a setup, but it was the Gestapo, Nazi concentration camp German, who seemed to be the worst type one had ever met, in charge of such places. I've heard the same said about Auschwitz and other places.
And was there a general contrast between the male guards and the female guards, or was it just between Kramer and Graeser?
I'm not quite sure what you mean, but...
Well, you said Kramer was correct.
Oh, yes, he was correct.
Graeser was abusive.
Ah, I understand.
Was there a general contrast between the males and the females?
I understand what you mean. Kramer was... presumably, having been trained as a soldier, knew that he had to behave correctly with the officers and so on, and he did. That did not lessen the repugnance with which he was viewed, nor did it lessen the crimes which we knew and found out he had committed. The woman was equally bloody, but she was... I suppose she didn't feel the same basic, instinctive military necessity to stand to attention and be very correct with the British officer captor. That's all.
But it sounds as though she was hostile to you.
Utterly hostile. To the bitter end.
And yet Kramer concealed his hostility.
Well, he was crawling. I mean, he was certainly hostile, but he was concealing any hatred he had. Well, this woman couldn't. Interesting.
Were they being treated properly?
With extreme... by us? Oh, absolutely. There was never any brutality by us. Because we did... our soldiers... were in no way like prison wardens. We were just the military owners of the jail, and we saw to it that the people who had the contact and did the work were the German warders, who were there anyway. But we supervised them. But you see, it wouldn't necessitate a Wiltshire soldier having to go to Joseph Cramer or the women and have anything to do with them, like feeding them or taking them to be bathed or anything like that. We would merely be there to see it was done properly.
Seems extraordinary that Grasser should have demanded to be associating with men,
yeah,
considering the situation she was in.
Well, she was demented. And I would say, although I was a very young man, I had a feeling there was a terrible sexual disorientation and evilness in that area. I was really very happy to be relieved of my duties with those people. To go into their presence, you felt you were going into the presence of evilness itself. I always think of that. Anyway, so it went on. One of the things which we all had to do under military law was to sit on general court-martials. And I was quite often on one, and I was quite often found myself as the junior member on one, as a major. And that court had the power of life and death. And we frequently had to administer the death sentence for crimes that were laid down merited the death sentence. And that was a nasty thing, really, because always in a military court, the president turns to the junior chap, first of all, and says, "May I have your opinion, guilty or not guilty?" You had to give it. Sometimes you may say, I feel very strongly about this, not guilty. Or I feel very strongly this. He may allow you to say that. And then the vote is taken. There are five. And on that vote, the man is found guilty or not guilty. Then the same thing, there's usually a judge advocate general present who's come from London or somewhere, or headquarters. And he is there to advise you, but he's not allowed to take part in any discussion on whether it's guilty or not. He's advised. He then can actually hint towards the punishment. Again, the junior chap was asked. I have had to say on one occasion, two or three occasions, death. Again, a very nasty thing for a young man to have to say, death. And those sentences were under military law and carried out.
About how many of these courts martial did you attend? Did you serve on?
Half a dozen.
And what kind of cases were they?
They were the crimes. You mean the crimes?
Yes.
They were murder, rape, carrying arms, breaking curfew and committing some crime during it, breaking the laws that were laid down by us. And one had to make one's mind up and be pretty ruthless.
And what kind of people were the accused?
The accused were ex-German soldiers, ex-displaced persons, Jews who'd committed a crime, revenge against the Germans, German and Pole and Czech and those sort of, it was a terrible mess. But we felt, or the Montgomery felt, and the generals felt, that unless we gripped the place with firm discipline and showed that there would be no leniency, things might go wrong.
What was the sentence for rape?
Death. Death, quite often. Anyway, one day the commanding officer said to me, my commanding officer, he said, we have to carry out the sentence of death, which a certain court has given. Oh, yes, he said, and I've decided that you will be in charge of the firing squad. I said, yes, I've never done this. He said, of course you haven't. Not many of us have. Read it up. Very good, sir. I read it up. I said to Sergeant Major, choose 10 volunteers, good chaps. I will speak to them and tell them why they have been chosen and what the crime is that this man has to be shot for. We have to do it tomorrow. We will go at dawn to this cellar jail where the man is. And I want 6-foot table, 2 laid out. There are rifles placed on the table. I will load each rifle with 1 round. 1 of the rifles I'll load with a blank. I'll explain that to the men, that if any of them are queasy about it, you may be the lucky one, if you don't want to shoot the man, to have the blank. It's a strange thing that we do in the British Army. The doctor will pin a white sheet of paper over the man's heart. The priest will be present. I will ask the man, if he wants his eyes bandaged, the doctor or someone can do that. I will not give any spoken word of command. I will raise my stick and I will lure it, and on luring it, you, who will have already taken aim, will fire. Is that understood? Yes, sir. Dawn came. The man was brought out. He was a German, quite brave. He said he didn't want a bandage. There was nothing like in the film saying, and I will have a last cigarette, nothing like that. He just stood there. I should think he was in a daze, wondering what was to happen. He was put against a post. I forget, his hands may have been tied behind his back to the post. I said to the soldiers, move forward, all by signs, take up the rifle, aim. I raised my hand and they fired. The doctor went forward, he turned to me, he said, there isn't a single bullet through this white sheet over his heart. The man is not dead. Major, it's your duty now to kill him. So I took my pistol out, and this chap was moaning, and he wasn't dead. It was shot through here, and a shot through here. And
through his arms and shoulders?
Yeah. And so I had to put my pistol to his head, and I shot him. We then went back. Dawn had barely passed, and being young men, I suppose we had a breakfast of bacon and eggs or whatever the third. But I was so angry with those men, I had them up afterwards and I asked them what they thought they were on about. They said, well, we've been in the war, sir, but we didn't like it. I said, don't question what you like. I told you what you were doing and why you were doing it. What happens? I have to do it. I am not pleased. And I'm not pleased with you, Sergeant Major, either, etc. I wasn't pleased.
How far away were they from the man?
15 yards. 15 yards.
How did you know about those measures of the tables and so on, the arrangements? How had you come to those conclusions that you ought to do it that way?
I read instructions that are laid down, which someone gave me from the brigade staff who were in charge of it. And that was that. So it wasn't very nice.
Do you know what the victim had done?
Yes, murder.
Who had he murdered?
He had a pistol. He had, I think he may have been hungry. I think he murdered a German farmer or something. Anyway, he was tried for murder for something or other. A story on which I probably enlarged on for the sake of the soldiers, the crime. The point of me mentioning it is this, that 3 weeks later, I met my brigadier who said, Jim, you did a very good job in that last execution. So good that I'm asking you to do another one tomorrow or next week. I said, I'd rather not. He said, I'm not interested in what you'd rather. You'll do it. Very good, sir. Same procedure, same jail. This time it was a Pole who had raped and murdered German farmers. And he came screaming out, unlike the other one, it was pretty stoical. He was screaming and shouting. I said to the doctor, you better put a gag in his mouth. He brushed aside the bandages and so on. Difficulty pinning the thing on, he was struggling. He had to be tied to the post. Again, I explained to these soldiers, different soldiers, what he'd done, and the same procedure. Regrettably, it was the same procedure to the end. Again, the doctor said to me, they haven't killed him. Again, I had to take my pistol, go up to the man who was still shouting, screaming, and shoot him dead. So while they were unpleasant things for a young man to do, I can tell you that I have never really had a sleepless night about it, because I firmly believed that it was my duty. Things have changed so much since, with the abolishment of capital punishment and the more humane ideas on people, the punishment of people, I might think differently now. But then I considered it my duty. I've never worried about it. Maybe those soldiers were worrying about it. I tried my best to tell them not to. And as their officer, in the end, I had to do it.
But if they were volunteers,
yeah,
why should they have deliberately missed?
You know what I mean by volunteers when the sergeant major is told to get a party together. I don't inquire into that. So, that was another part of the strange life these young soldiers of ours had to lead. Slowly, the great, enormous British Army and Navy and so on were being disbanded and sent back to civilian life. And the 4th Battalion and the 5th Battalion of the Wiltshire Regiment were among those who were disbanded. And those of us who were left were sent to other battalions, regular battalions, 2nd Wiltshire's in my case, in Hanover. And a number of people were coming back, some who hadn't really done much in the war, but it came back. One of them was a chap who funnily enough, he was my first adjutant when I joined the army in 1938. And I took an instant dislike to him. I suspect he did to me. But he was a very brutal fellow. And I remember no one liked him. And when the war came, he was one of the few people who'd been to the staff college in my regiment. Only two between the two wars. He was one. He got a staff job in Cairo. And he stayed there the whole war, wearing boots and breeches, I imagine. And when the war ended, he came back and asked for command and got it. He's one of those chaps who regretted he had never seen a shot fired, and therefore he was not held in high regard. You do not expect a regular infantry officer to behave like that and to avoid, palpably avoid, going to a frontline unit. He was one. The reason I mention this is because he continued his foul behavior of bullying people, and also he was quietly black marketeering as a commanding officer, and he was committing other military crimes, so much so that the Majors Union, which I use for want of a better word, approached the brigadier with a state of affairs, who approached the general, who was a very good general, a grenadier, I remember, Gregson Ellis. And he sent for this man, and it was very interesting because he was kicked out within days. Most unusual thing for senior officers to take notice of junior officers complaining about, almost unheard of in the British Army.
What was his bullying behaviour, specifically?
It was his whole attitude to discipline and favouritism, and if he didn't like an officer, he would pillory him and make his life a living hell, which an adjutant and a commanding officer can do. And it was just after a long war and so on, we were not in the mood for this. There was a mood of how are we going to get the regiment back to peacetime soldiering, and how are we going to look after the soldiers? He was not interested in that. He was interested more in himself.
When you say the Major's Trade Union, you mean some informal...
No, I use that word, which is used among us, in a laughing way when we get together and say, I think the CO should know about this. And quite often the trade union is just the company commanders, not the second in command, who's also a major. Mate of the CO should be. Anyway, the good Lord behaves in a strange way. Within a year, this man was dead. So that's the end of him.
From natural causes?
Yes, he wasn't shot or anything. He died of cancer. This was